This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So, I mentioned this before, we had a guest on, but during the month of October, I'm going to be an ambassador for Men Wear Pink, raising money for the American Cancer Society. We have put a link on our Facebook, correct? Is that right?
Yep.
Picture me wrapped in a breast cancer blankie, which I use every single day, have for about a year now. So that's what I look like in normal, like just walking around. These guys will tell you. Everyone's
that's not
like,
just
oh,
October.
Dave's got his blankie. And so this is one of those. It's real easy to give. And I know that most everyone out there has been affected by cancer one way or another. If you have and you got $5-$10, please put that into the till. And we'll see. We're supposed to get up to $2,500. So we'll see how quickly we can do that and get it done by the end of October. And I'll be harping on you guys about it, just like I will Operation Food Surge, Food Surge a month from now. But here in the DGS, you guys have always done great things. You've never let me down when it comes to raising money. And I'm sure you won't this time. So please give generously to American Cancer Society. Razor's Edge.
Yes, I have many things I'd like to talk about today, mostly mm-hmm. because none of them are particularly long topics, just being honest.
Can I ask you a question first?
What's up?
Do you mind talking about what we talked about in the office today? What you're suffering from?
My jet lag?
I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. So got back from Japan 2 weeks ago now, I guess. I feel more tired now than I did when I first got back. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on.
Does jet lag last that long?
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not a doctor.
I think it can screw you up. Like, yeesh. Change your internal clock.
Yeah, my internal clock is just all messed up. And I just feel like when I sleep, I can't get enough sleep. Like, I never wake up feeling rested and feeling good. Yeah. I just want to keep sleeping. So today I'm really struggling. For some reason, I'm just, like, extremely tired. Yeah. And it was like that basically all weekend. And last week, it was like that a little bit, too. So it's just weird that it's hurting more now than it did when I first got back. I think I was going off of some adrenaline.
Yeah, I say the adrenaline wears off. Yep.
Yeah, and now I'm just living with my body thinking it's 14 hours ahead.
I'm sure there's something like some sleep expert would probably tell you. Like if you can, like you came back on a Saturday and came to work on a Monday, right?
Yeah.
That was tough. That's a quick turnaround.
It is.
But like if you should just sleep for 48 hours and try to just regularly, you know, there's got to be some answer to it.
Yeah and it's not like Saturday when I got home, I had like some weird sleeping patterns and I slept till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon the next day because I had woken up at like 3 a.m. and stayed up till like 6 and then went back to sleep. And I'm boring you guys with the details. But since then, I've been on like a pretty normal sleep schedule. I might take a nap. Like on the weekends when I have time to take a nap, but still like, it's weird to go to bed at the same time that you normally do and, but feel all screwed up about it. So,
you know what else feels like that? Being 60.
Really?
I'm not lying to you. I remember when Close turned 65, when he's on the show and I'm like, what does 65 feel like? And he goes, it feels like having the flu every day.
Oh no.
And it's not quite that bad, but you can tell a difference. Mm-hmm. Like you can, and I'm not, I mean, I'm about as skinny as I've been in my adult life, but I'm not into the best shape I've been in my whole life. So I could fight it more than I am, but it's just weird when you don't look that much different, but you just feel, everyone my age and up knows this, unless you're like super, super fit and you take a bunch of like healthy stuff, but it's, but it's like having a bad body day. Like when you're 40 and you have a bad body day, you know, just a bad, I don't feel good in my own skin. I'm hungover, whatever it is. It's like having that on every day.
No bueno.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I mean, we're all going to get there.
Yeah. And it's not terrible. It's just, it's like when
thing.
I lost the foot race to Phoebe's ex-boyfriend. It's just one of those, oh,
yep.
That's right.
We have now crossed that Rubicon.
I can't outrun 17-year-old athletes anymore.
Yep.
Yep. Back to you, Rach.
All right, let's talk about dying and what Al Pacino has to say about it. Have you guys seen this story? It's just popped up in the last 24 hours or so. Al Pacino is telling his experience getting COVID before there was a COVID vaccine. And I guess he was in a very bad way. And he recounts, you know, his experience and waking up and there's like six paramedics in all the COVID garb. And he was just very confused. But he said, like, he feels like he died for a couple minutes there. Like, he was gone for a while. And he says, in, you know, just picture it in his Al Pacino voice, like, there's nothing there. It's nothing. It's to be or not to be. And there's not to be. Like, there's nothing. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. We talk about near-death experiences a lot on the show. And oftentimes people will be like, I was in heaven or I was in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have Al Pacino telling us there's just nothing there. It's just over for you once it's
over. Do you see that someone is dating his very young baby mama?
Wait, they broke up?
They broke up. I think so. If not, someone should tell Bill Maher because he's leaving hotels with her. So
Bill Maher is dating her?
Mm-hmm. Younger man.
Wow.
Yeah, what's kind of incredible, I was just reading a little bit about this. She's just in it for the love of the game. That's just her taste in men. She's like independently wealthy. So she's not
adults.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think that's totally fine, but it's just like, it was surprising to find out, and maybe this is misogynistic of me, but it was surprising to find out that she was like independently wealthy.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, and wasn't just like, you know.
So she's not after the money.
She's not just dating like super rich older guys. That's what she's into, I guess.
She just likes older guys. I mean,
likes older guys.
Well, you know, good for her. I'm looking at this Daily Mail article about the situation and they're referring to her as Al Pacino's girlfriend. So I don't know if like
maybe they're just buddies.
Yeah, maybe the three of them had dinner or something and they left in the same car. I don't know what's going on, but
I would date Bill Maher. He's a smart dude.
Would you rather date Bill Maher or Al Pacino?
Bill Maher.
I think
Al's
I'd
a little too.
You don't, you just don't want all those like public moments where he's like,
oh boy.
Oh boy.
Now we're just doing impressions of
really bad ones, too.
Gas.
Yeah.
He really made me laugh at the Oscars last year because he was going to give the Best Picture Oscar and he didn't read any of the nominees. He just read, he was like, my eyes see Oppenheimer. That was the whole thing. It was just really funny that he just skipped to the.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Just
he's
chase.
Got no time for all that. He's got
right.
nothing waiting for him
when
he dies.
Out and he was like, the movies were great this year. And then he opened the thing. He's like, Oppenheimer wins.
He's like, there's cool. nothing after you're dead. Let's just get on with it.
Yeah. He's like, I only have a little bit of time left. There's nothing after this.
Yeah. All right. Next topic. We don't really talk about the Hawk Tua girl too much on the DGS.
Really never have.
I do.
You talk about her and I'm saying we don't talk about her on the show.
Oh, okay.
She kind of, I don't really have strong feelings either way about the Hawk Tua girl. All I know is she shows up in my feed all the time and I'm over it. And yet I kept clicking on the articles. And the other day I was like, I know how to defeat this. Just stop looking at it. And then the algorithm will suggest something else. And that's just my little PSA to you people out there. If you keep seeing the same person on your social media and you're tired of them, don't be like me. Don't continuously interact with it. Just stop, and then it'll hopefully go away. That's my advice.
That's the thing that
stop
surprises
that
me is now, like, like, first of all, I'd say good for her taking advantage of every opportunity that comes from you making a joke.
Yeah.
Because if you're getting paid whatever you're getting paid to do a podcast, you should take it, because you may not get another break like that. Nothing. I do not judge her one bit. She should take every opportunity that comes her way.
What if it was your daughter who got famous for that reason?
Whatever. I mean,
still?
It's just, how many guys have told a joke like that?
No, yeah. I'm,
you know, if my 22-year-old, I don't have a son.
Not trying to be as misogynistic
right,
as Andrew.
No, I'm just like, everybody's a bit judgy, but how many dudes who are the ones hiring people who are doing this have told those jokes or laughed
every,
at those? All of us have. So why would we judge one person for making a joke we've all made?
Have you guys been watching Talk Tua?
No.
I see clips. I see clips on Instagram.
I've been keeping up with
Does she
Tua.
Seem to have chops other than that one joke?
She seems,
no.
Well, yeah. I mean, she shouldn't like come work for KMOX or anything, but she seems like a very nice young lady.
Yeah. She's not, boy.
Watch yourself.
No, I have no fear of retaliation on this. She's not very interesting.
She just got a cute little accent.
She's very much just like a 28-year-old white girl who's normal or whatever, right? Like, she's not like, I got so many deep thoughts about things. Like, she's just...
Yeah, there are a lot of things I don't get, though. Like, I don't get why Jimmy Kimmel's famous, but, you know, like, that happens. There are, you know, I just don't, there are so many, think about how many people you can think of that got really famous for stupid reasons. I mean, what made Kim Kardashian and him famous originally?
Big butt.
It was a sex tape. That's what really made Kim Kardashian a star, and that hasn't changed the fact that now she's a billionaire.
Big old booty.
You know, like, I mean, all the guys on...
Man, you are on a tear.
We're on the air, Andrew. I just want to remind you.
It's like...
For a second, I'm like, did he just say that on the air again?
He had a big booty. That's why she's famous.
Can I be honest with you? My
note
of people are texting me, so I'm a little distracted, and I'm looking at this. I'm following along. I thought I made that up in my head.
That he was like, she got a big booty, I call her big booty.
She got a big booty.
Yeah. How is that worse than what he said?
It's not worse. It's just like...
It's just funnier. It's funnier. Let's be honest. Yeah.
And it was unforced. Like, no. It wasn't even your turn to talk, and you're just like, she got a big booty.
But I mean, like... Johnny Knoxville is famous for doing stupid things, right?
Right.
A lot of people have that.
Well, he was an actor, too.
Not before he started doing Jackass.
I don't know. Is that... Well, he was a stunt guy.
I understand, but my point is he got famous for shooting fireworks out of his butt and for playing pranks on his friends.
I blame you for this. This is Razor's Edge.
No, this is brilliant, by the way.
I brought up Hawk to this is on me. The point I was trying to make is, like, if someone's just overstaying their welcome on your phone, just don't interact.
Yeah.
And that's all you got to do.
Don't feed the algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's sometimes I'm ashamed at how long it takes me to figure that out because I'm such a carp. Like, I will be hooked in by, you know, the headline. It's like, the Talk to a Girl has a new podcast. And I'm like, oh, does she really now? And then suddenly I'm watching the entire thing. Okay, one more thing, and this is something else I saw on social media. Do you guys know who Dua Lipa is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Dave knows.
What do you think we're out of it?
Andrew, of course Andrew knows who Dua Lipa is.
Yeah, big boobs.
Yeah.
She's a very beautiful pop singer. She posted a TikTok this weekend of herself making like a... Remember Close used to call them a Baptist cocktail? It was a Diet Coke and
I don't
lime.
Remember that.
I'm pretty sure that's... I'm
that
pretty sure I heard
exactly
that from
exactly like something Close would say.
Well, yeah. Now the cute young gals are taking Diet Coke and mixing it with pickle juice. Yeah, and I'm a little intrigued. I kind of want to try it.
Is it all the cute young girls, or is it just Dua Lipa's a weirdo?
Well, Dua Lipa did it, so now I assume it'll become a trend.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just trying to get in on the ground floor
for sure,
of this thing.
For sure.
Too salty. That made my mouth hurt.
She also mixed in some jalapeno juice in there.
Mm.
No.
I would do it. I would try it.
Looks horrible.
Our girl Julia here drains the pickle juice. That sounded terrible. Like in the fridge, she just picks it up and drinks
juice.
It.
Yes. Yeah.
My wife
pickles are gone. Too. Takes it down.
So
my
good.
My wife likes that.
Ugh.
You guys want to do one more topic, or are you
sure.
tired of Razor's Edge? Okay, last thing I'll talk about. Sorry about this segment, everybody. I was in a waiting room the other day, and...
I'm
just trying not to get fired. That last one, I could not say any of the things
yeah,
that came
into
my head.
Yeah, we all saw it.
I know.
Yep.
I was just thinking about all of the social intricacies that go into selecting a seat when you're in a public place.
Hmm.
Like if you're in a waiting room, for example, and you're the only one sitting down and then someone comes in, it's like, you better not sit next to me. Like, let's get real here. Or if you're at a coffee shop and the whole coffee shop is open, go sit on the other side of the coffee shop.
Yeah.
But if you were to sit right next to me and it's crowded, it makes total sense. It's just one of those weird situational, like, is this acceptable? Is it not?
Wife and I went to a restaurant on Saturday for lunch. It's a very quiet restaurant. They don't have like music going or whatever. There's not usually a lot of people there. And we sat in our booth and we're eating. And then another couple comes in and they sit in the booth that's like directly behind us.
Were they sat there by the hostess or
no,
they chose
they
it?
They were just told like, sit wherever you want.
That's
and
weird.
They hopped in
I'm
there
sorry,
and
that's
like,
weird.
Ugh. And it was like the kind of place, again, it's like a big echoey place and there's no like other sound or whatever. It wasn't busy. So it's like... I could hear everything they were saying. I know that they could hear everything that we were saying. I just don't like that. I don't know.
I'm with you, man.
I want to be perceived out in public.
And yet, whenever it's crowded, it's perfectly acceptable because it's like, well, where else are you going to sit? Yeah, plop on down. This is fine. But when it's empty like that, just sit on the other side of the room. Be a real person.
223 DGS. Rachel's talking about the hot Tua girl in Razor's Edge, and it made me think about a conversation I had over the weekend that the fact that the new generation, and to some extent all of us now, I mean, I'm on TikTok, are open to / prefer normies making their entertainment as opposed to professionals. And the person I was talking to said, this must be how plumbers and carpenters felt when the do-it-yourself craze hit. I thought that was a pretty good analogy. That if you're a plumber or a carpenter, you know, drywall or whatever, and people hire you to do what you are trained to do and you do it excellently, but then they just get caught up in doing it themselves, even though they don't do it as well as you, but they're having a great time, and now you're out of work to some extent. Your face tells me you don't agree.
I don't agree. I'm sorry. I feel like sometimes it's easy from our perch to be like, oh, these people making content, they're not as good as the real entertainers. And it's like, well, they might be better because they don't have a company backing them. They're just doing it themselves. And if they're finding success doing it, it's almost more impressive to me because they were able to start it from the ground up. It's also, I mean, people still want to go to the movies. They still want to watch a real TV show. Just because you're taking in content that's made by amateurs, if that's the way you want to say it, like, that's more like, to me, it's more like, oh, I'll just spend an hour on TikTok hanging out with this, having this like parasocial relationship, almost like having a friendship with someone rather than, oh, I'm going to go be entertained by someone.
Do you think there's sort of parallel lines?
Yeah, I don't think that anyone who's creating content online and killing it and doing it, I don't think that's lesser than somewhat like than what we do necessarily. There's more of a barrier for entry for this, but that doesn't mean that everyone who gets through and is doing this is like amazing, you know?
It's interesting to me,
Amy.
I'm talking about myself.
It's interesting to me that there's a vast difference. The reason that those things are popular on TikTok or Instagram or whatever is because they're quick, right? Like, if you have the elite level of talent to
be a good point.
A stand-up comedian, that means going out for an hour in front of a crowd and slaying for an hour. A lot of people can be funny for 90 seconds at a time. And that's not knocking any of the people that are creators. It's just a different thing. It's not the same. Nobody is elevating that person and saying, I want you to star in a movie.
Would you agree with that, Rach? I think that's a good point.
Well, yeah. And when we're talking about like the art of stand-up comedy, absolutely. I think there are people who maybe unduly will get like a special because they've been popular on TikTok or something. And then you watch the special and you go, that wasn't very good. But that's an art form. If we're just talking about like making a funny skit or something, I don't think that's any less than... I'm having a hard time articulating exactly what I want to say, but I don't look down on it and go like, oh, that's so cute that you're trying. It's like, well, no, like if they're making a success out of that and they have nothing backing them, that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I was looking at it more from the standpoint of the professionals, though. And that was my point, that the professional plumbers and carpenters probably saw a hit from the DIY movement. And I think professional entertainers are seeing a hit now.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Brad Pitt's not missing any meals.
I was going to say that's where I'm trying to decide where, because maybe it's more of the mid-level professionals that take the bigger hit. But I don't think TV stars or movie stars or anybody, like no actors are losing because people are doing good skits on TikTok. But maybe there is some level on the food chain where it is impacting. Am I saying that in a way that makes sense?
I feel you.
Because I don't think that. You know, you see a lot on, you know, it's either sketch comedy or prank comedy or just like interesting parodies of things. But it's not like it's taking anybody's record sales away. It's not like it's taking anyone's ability to sell out a show. I mean, concerts are still selling out. Stand-ups are still doing their thing. Movies are still being made. But I wonder if there's a level in there somewhere where someone is, this is my profession and this new... it's not new form, but this new way of delivering entertainment is eaten into what I'm trying to do.
Probably us. I would think radio shows are probably the most affected.
I mean, I know that for a long time, people in our line of work look down on podcasts. Oh, podcasters. Just like a lot of and I'm this is probably more like 10, 15, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, when podcasts and blogs and those things were new, and you would have real journalists like, well, oh, you got a blog in your mom's basement. And that attitude can still exist. Mm-hmm. But how many good people have been discovered because they have the access to the world?
Right.
You know, I mean, I wish when I was 22 coming out of college that I could have just started a podcast that would have gotten your voice out there and maybe the right person hears it. You know, I mean, like there are so many better ways to be discovered now than there were 25 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah, there are basically none. Like if you wanted a radio show, you had to make a tape, send it into a Steve Moore. He had to listen. He had to like it. He had to give you a job.
There had to be a job open.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 233. Every Monday and Friday, we talk to the great Bernie Miklas, who is now part of the KMOX team. Changing some technical stuff around today, the way we talk to him, so pardon us if it takes a couple of minutes to get him dialed in. Bern, you there? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you getting any slapback today? Or are you good?
No, it's all good, man. All right.
Perfect. This is the way it's supposed to work. That's right. This is KMOX, damn it. 1120. Mofo.
who said technology is supposed to be easy? I mean, my entire home. No, listen, man, my entire home internet service blew up on Thursday.
Oh.
And then there's some other things that went on with streaming that just blew up as well. And I'm like, does anything work anymore?
It sucks. It sucks. I don't know how techie you are. I'm not techie. I mean, even for a 6-year-old, I'm not techie. And when something goes out, I am lost. I can't fix any damn thing.
Same here, no doubt.
Let's start off with Cardinals because we have a whole bunch of stuff to get to. Playoff baseball, Mizzou, all that kind of stuff. I always burn, just so you know where I'm coming from, I read a lot of articles from my phone that Wheels always tells me, like, take it all with a grain of salt. But I saw one guy who was like, two things have to happen for the Cardinals. One, they have to trade Helsley. They just have to. And they should have traded him. They should have been sellers at the deadline, but they didn't. They got to sell him in the offseason. And two, Ivan Herrera has to be the catcher. You got to unload Contreras. Paez is great defensively, but he's not got the bat. Are those two things silly, or do you kind of see where they're coming from?
No, I think if you know, unless they're deluding themselves into thinking that they can actually contend in 2025, and I don't think that's in the works. I think it would be irresponsible not to trade Helsley because they're not going to re-sign him after next season. Plus, closers, especially guys who throw 100 miles an hour, they break down. So there's a vulnerability there that's pretty risky. So no, I think they could get a good return for Ryan Helsley, and they really need to consider that. They need to do it. And as far as Herrera, that's an interesting thing. You know, he's terrible defensively. He's got a major bat. I would think that they could polish him up defensively, or they could move him to first base, or use him more often in the DH role. I mean, the bottom line is he needs to play more because of his offense. His offense is very, very good and potentially great.
Do you guys feel, Wheels, let me jump in before you answer, do you guys feel like there's any reason to unload Contreras?
Wheels, go ahead. I'm sorry, buddy.
No, I mean, to me, the only way I would want to is if I can get a great return for him. Like, good hitting catchers are almost non-existent. There's 3, 4, maybe 5 on the planet, and teams are always looking for a guy there that can provide some offense. So, you know, I don't love a lot of what he's done defensively, but he's gotten better. He's gotten better, particularly at blocking. His throwing's generally been good, although this year it wasn't. But it's hard to know if that's because of the time missed and just not having a complete sample size to look at. But if somebody comes to you and says, man, we're going to give you a pitcher, another hitter, and maybe a lottery ticket prospect, why not? I mean, this is the one thing, Byrne, in the past, and I'll be curious to see where you go with this. In the past, right, even a few months ago, I would have said, you probably don't trade Helsley because the team is always selling, we want to make the playoffs. And if you want to make the playoffs, you want the 48, 49 save guy in the bullpen. But if you're taking the priority off of that, which is what we've heard here in the last couple of weeks, well, then what you said is money. You do take advantage of that. And that's kind of how I would look at it with Sonny Gray, with Wilson Contreras. If a team comes to you and says, here's three or four really good pieces, maybe they take you years to build up in the draft, but in a year or two, by making some of those moves, especially at catcher, when you have two other major league quality catchers that have holes in their games for sure, but room to grow, then you listen to any good offer. But I don't think the team needs to be like, we need to dump salary.
No. Now, I think there'd be a lot of interest in Helsley, and I think there'd be a lot of interest in Sonny Gray, because to have two controllable years of Sonny Gray, I mean, he's a really good pitcher, really good pitcher. And has he actually gotten, his stuff has gotten nastier and nastier. So he's poised to continue to pitch really, really well because of that sweeper. The catcher, so Helsley and Gray, to me, if you can trade him, you trade him. If there's any interest in Arenado, you'd have to eat a lot of salary. You would trade him too.
Right.
And he would have to agree to it. The Contreras thing is interesting because I'm not sure how to gauge the interest in him because I think his defense has improved. I think the people that still say, oh, he's terrible defensively, I don't think he is. I think he's gotten – but he's still a below-average catcher with an above-average arm. And the thing of it is, like, how many people would want to give you a lot of stuff, for example, for, you know, 3 years, $18 million a year? That's his contract that's left. But also maybe you know, doing so and with plans to use him as a DH. That would be a lot to give up for a DH if this team doesn't think he should be the everyday catcher. I'm speaking in hypotheticals. So
yeah, and I think that's about the fit. So just throwing it as a, this is not, I'm not trying to start any rumors because I hate doing that.
That's
but
right.
Like a team that would be like Detroit, for example, that has a catcher they like who's a good defense first catcher, but he only plays four games a week. A place like that for a guy who is in the 90th percentile in expected production with how well he hits the baseball would be a great full-time DH and a two-game-a-week catcher. And I think there are other fits like that where a bat is the need, especially a bat that can get behind the plate two or three times a week. That is, I'm not saying it would be a massive return, but this is kind of my point. The point that I'm making is I don't shop him. I don't say I have to dump that contract, but I'd certainly listen if somebody else says, here's two or three really good young players, and we'd love to have this player from you.
I would see. I'm probably in the minority because I'm kind of radical on this. I think they've put off over, rebuilding for a long time, for too long, and they're staying in this one lane, and they're never going to get out of this lane where they're kind of okay. They're, you know, they're 500, maybe a little better. Technically, they're a contender, but they're really not. I mean, they just can't continue to stay on that one path. They have to declare what they're doing. And if it means two or three years of rebuilding, they need to do it because you're going to have a new guy taking over a year from now anyway.
Yep.
And I think you're going to get a lot smarter in your baseball decisions and your downtime, I think, will be limited rather than something lengthy. But so my mindset is if anybody calls you about one of your players, you need to listen and listen hard because The only thing that would mess this up, the Cardinals are trying to mislead their fans, or not mislead them, but trying to sweet talk them. And it's, oh, no, we're still trying to win this year. Listen, just be upfront with your fans, and I think a good number of them would accept it. They may not like it, but they would accept it.
You know, and in recent years, I mean, by recent, let's call it in the last decade or so, we've seen the Dodgers do the reset. We've seen the Red Sox do the reset. We've seen the Yankees do it, where they take a year where they're like, all right, we're not what we need to be. Let's trade Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs while the Cubs are making a run, and we'll get a prospect in return. Like, even the biggest of the big boys have done what we're talking about.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And actually, the Cardinals have been a very well-run organization. They've slacked off because they let their model get stale and stagnant and outdated, and that never should have happened. But, you know, the Cardinals, though, it's amazing to me how many teams have had five losing seasons, nine or more losing seasons. Like, Mozeliak became the general manager in 2008, and the Cardinals have had one losing season,
right.
And the Dodgers have had one, and the Yankees have had none. There are it's an amazing number of teams, because I was looking at this today. The other 27 teams, you take the Yankees, Cardinals, and Dodgers out. The other 27 teams, every single one of them has had at least five losing records since 2008. Now, some people say, well, the point is to get to the playoffs. Yeah, I understand that. You got it. You don't have to tell me that. But my point is that when you have all of these, you have a lot of really good teams that have had a lot of losing seasons. The point is, they all had to take some time to regroup. They all had to rebound and retool things. And the Cardinals have pretty much avoided that, which to me makes it all more meaningful and all the more necessary to finally take on that assignment of a moderate rebuild.
Boy, we're running out of time so fast here with Bernie. Yep. Let's talk some Mizzou. Wheels, I disagree with you on something. Now, you were making the point that bad call in the beginning of the game.
Couple of them.
You have to be able to come back from that if you're a top 25 team, much less a top 10 team. I totally agree. But I'm not sure I can recall a sporting event in the last couple of years where I could feel the momentum. You could feel the daubers in the dirt over the television set. You guys agree?
I don't know, Dave. I mean, because I don't think Mizzou was prepared to play the game. I think the head coach screwed up. I think the head coach, I don't know what they worked on when they were off for 2 weeks with the bye week, 2 weeks to prepare for Texas A&M. They weren't prepared at all. You had Eli Drinkwitz, totally miscalculating who the starting quarterback would be for Texas A&M. You had some of their players, engaging in tomfoolery for no reason. They weren't ready to play. And that, so anything that came anything other than that premise, I would have to politely push back on. Because they didn't show up. It was a complete no-show.
Yeah,
and that's inexcusable.
If it were a closer game, I can buy the momentum shift with the calls early. But if missing out on two calls in the first quarter causes you to get the living crap beat out of you, then you're just not very good.
You're not very good.
Brady Cook didn't go 13 of 31 because of two calls. Yeah. He's awful.
He's not having a good season. I got some numbers on him, which I will not bore you with, but they're pretty glaring as far as his lack of accuracy. There's something there. I don't know what's going on.
Thank God for Alabama. No one's talking about Mizzou.
That's right.
Well, I mean, the whole, like, look, there were four top 10 teams that got beat. Three of them were by unranked opponents, and there was almost a fifth. My guys almost went down, too.
Yeah.
Thank God they didn't.
I thought they did, actually.
I quit at first, and then I came back.
I checked in that score, and I saw Cal win in by a big amount. I said, well, this one's over.
Yep.
I wonder how Wheeler's taking it.
I rage quit, dude. As soon as Cam Ward threw the pick six to start the second half, I literally just turned off the TV, walked away, and threw three things across the room. And then after about 15 minutes of calming down, I went back and watched the game because I'm a sucker.
There you go. 251 DGS on KMOX. Okay, ruling. Monster check is David Monster. I bought a pumpkin. It's hard for me not to say pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
That's what it is. I want to say pumpkin because I think it's cute, and I say pumpkin a lot. But I think someone here hates that. Is it you?
I'm not a fan, but do whatever you want, Dave. It's your show. Call it a pumpkin.
No, you're judging. So I bought my pumpkin, and the squirrels immediately started eating it.
Okay.
And it pissed me off, so I sprayed my pumpkin with Windex and Febreze, thinking that it would taste bad to the squirrels and they would leave it alone. Evidently, it's just like adding a pecan aftertaste because now they're really going after it. Then I thought, just be a good human. Let the squirrels eat. It's winter time. Let them eat the pumpkin seeds or whatever it is that they do. It was a $5 pumpkin. You can replace it, but it's my pumpkin.
I'm in the let them eat category.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love them eating the Windex. Like poisoning the squirrels?
Yes.
That's not great.
Well, it didn't work.
Yeah, they ended up liking it.
And I wasn't trying to poison them. Otherwise, I would have got squirrel poison.
You're trying to deter them.
Yeah, I'm just trying. Like, if someone sprayed Windex on my burger, I'm not eating the burger, so.
Yeah.
The squirrels are watching like, oh, man, he just got out the
Febreze. He just sprayed on that. I'm not eating that.
I wish I could find this. Do you guys, anyone remember seeing my squirrel video from last year? Andrew, you remember this? Where
yes.
The squirrel was, like, they were converging. And I started filming, and there were three of them, and they're just, like, talking amongst themselves, you know? He's like, I'm going to eat the stem this time. And then they saw me, and they all went, ha! And they took off running and ran up a tree, and the ringleader, I could tell because he was the fattest, was his back was against the tree,
yeah.
And his arms were down to his sides, and he was trying to blend in with the tree.
Yeah.
I said, like, look at this mofo. Like,
yeah. He's creeping around the side.
Just creeping around the side.
They got skills.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, that's any squirrels, come to my house, you can have my pumpkins.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I don't like that, then
at least I felt bad about it.
So yeah. It's a whole pumpkin? It's not a jack-o'-lantern?
No, it's a whole pumpkin.
That's kind of impressive that they're, like, getting in there like that.
Oh, dude, within 2 days, they will have a hole that you can put your whole fist in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for them. Free food.
Yeah.
Just like here at a radio station. Put food out, it's going to get eaten.
Right.
I mean, if you put a pizza out there that was part of your Halloween decoration, I'd probably come eat it.
That's a good point. I'm definitely spraying Windex on that. Wheeler standing against my tree with his back against it.
Trying to blend in.
I'm not here.
Andrew's trying to climb up.
He's got a squirrel tail.
I have an unnatural love for a painted pumpkin. Way more, you know, jack-o'-lanterns are fine. Like, they're fine, but I'm not a big pumpkin carving person. I've always loved, like, going to Eckert's or something, and they have the pumpkins painted for you with, like, a little kitty cat face.
You like
or
the
something.
Spooky pumpkins?
Yeah, the little,
little ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those,
you can
those
wing those
great.
Things.
You can wing a lot of things.
I feel bad for the gourds. They look like they have leprosy.
Them. Yeah.
Right?
They have all the lumps on them, and you're just like, I'm not touching that thing.
I saw a cartoon where these beautiful pumpkins were answering the door, and it was a bunch of ugly gourds. And they're like, now you be nice. We only see them once at Thanksgiving.
Oh, no.
We all know what that's like, am I right?
I don't know why they're selling them at, like, Eckert's and stuff. It's like, are they just here to fill out space?
I mean, people buy them.
Yeah, you got to buy, like, five of the ugly ones and put them together, and then they look cute, like spilling out of a cornucopia or
dude,
something.
Dude, I can spend an inordinate amount of time picking out a pumpkin at Schnucks.
What do you look for in a pumpkin, Dave?
Sincerity.
Good personality.
I mean, that's just
the ability to hold Windex if it's sprayed upon it.
Yeah ability to hold squirrel poison.
I would never. I don't think I would ever buy a pumpkin or a gourd or anything if it was, like, just left on my devices.
Ever?
Ever.
Why?
Would you decorate anything ever?
Why?
No, this is true.
Why, Ebenezer?
I wouldn't decorate anything. I would just, you know.
Ever?
Probably no. No, because then it means I got to put it away.
What a sad existence.
I just celebrated in my mind.
I think we found the first flaw.
No, I have a lot of flaws.
No, because he doesn't think that's a flaw.
No, it's fine.
Right. He won't acknowledge that.
Yeah, but we get to say what his flaws are.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of those.
As soon as he walks out this room, we get to pile on.
That doesn't mean I care if they're flaws.
He's going Marge mode.
Somewhere between Marge and Yoda
Homer!
There.
Yoda.
Pumpkin lights.
Annoying you are.
No fun at the holidays. Invite him or something.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.